the Arctic Ocean, because so many explorers, including the great Peary, came back saying that there was land in the Arctic Ocean between North America and the pole, but they didn't know for sure about it. No one had actually been on the land. Explorers claimed they had seen it, however. Wilkins decided to find out once and for all. That was his number one goal. And finally, with money that he got from Noel Ween, he bought a new plane that turned out to be the most successful of the planes that he flew in and used. It was a Lockheed Vega. Wilkins, although an airman himself and a pilot, never piloted his own planes when they were on a project of this kind. He always had top airmen at the controls, and that left him free for geographical observation and all the other things that he wanted to do. And his number one pilot, as you all know, was that great Alaskan airman for whom you have named one of your buildings, Ben Ileson. And finally, Ben Ileson and Hubert Wilkins, because his name was George in those days, they took off from the top of Alaska, and they made the first great flight of exploration across the Arctic Ocean to Spitsbergen, and found out once and for all that the rumors of the land in the Arctic Ocean were not true. And Wilkins, I think, stands out in my mind as being a man of triumphant spirit, well, almost surpassing any human being I ever knew. My time is really up. I intended to tell you of one more, but I'll come back and do that another time. I intended to tell you about sitting here somewhere in the room, I believe, is an eminent gentleman who used to be on your Board of Regents. He's from Nome, Mike Walsh. And if Mike Walsh is here, perhaps you could get him to tell you the story, if he knows the details of it. I would like to tell you the life story of Jimmy Doolittle, who's now hunting bear down in the Alaskan Peninsula, because I think it's one of the all-time epics and is almost unknown. I mean the story of Jimmy before he made the Tokyo flight. I wrote a biography of Doolittle in the late 20s, and at that time he was only about 30 years old, but he had already lived through as much high adventure as men of high adventure go through in several lifetimes. But there isn't time to tell about Doolittle. And in conclusion, I would merely like to say this, that one of the reasons I came north today was that, as I say, I've always enjoyed being exposed to the contagion of men of triumphant spirit. And I feel that all Alaskans have that quality. Not only that, but I believe that all of you in the class of 1962 at the University of Alaska have it. Because if you didn't have it, I don't believe that you would be here. You may not agree with me about this. I'm not a prophet, but I wish I could follow your careers from here on. Because I have a suspicion that on the average, you will go farther than an equal number of graduates of Harvard and Yale. I was going to say Princeton, but I went to Princeton, so I won't include that. Because if you live in Alaska, you are unusual. If you come north and go to the University of Alaska, you are men and women of triumphant spirit. And I congratulate you, and I also want to salute in particular a member of your class, Mr. Noel Ween. Thank you.
Pleasure to present at the 40th commencement of the University of Alaska these candidates for baccalaureate degrees in the various curricula. The registrar has certified that they have fulfilled all academic requirements for the respective degrees. faculty of the college concerned and the academic council of the university have recommended that they now receive their diploma. Will the candidates for the degree of Bachelor of Arts please rise? Candidates for the degree of Bachelor of Business Administration, please rise. Candidates for the degree of Bachelor of Education, please rise. Candidates for the degree of Bachelor of Science, please rise.
Sir, I present these candidates for the baccalaureate degrees in their respective fields as set forth in the official program.
By virtue of the authority in me vested as President of the Board of Regents, under the Constitution of the State of Alaska, and upon the recommendation of the President of the University and the faculty, I confer upon you the baccalaureate degrees to which you are entitled with all the rights, privileges, and honors pertaining thereto.
We request that the audience refrain from applause until the last baccalaureate degree has been awarded. Gerald J. Campbell, Bachelor of Arts, Major in English. William Eaton Dam, Major in History. Barbara McCallum, Cum Laude, Major in History. Richard Henry Pickens, Major in Political Science. Henry Patrick Powers, Jr., Major in Peter A. Breuer, Major in History. Janine Tate, Major in History. Judy Dutch Wilson, Major in Sociology and Psychology. For the degree Bachelor of Business Administration, Herbert Dutton Barber, Major in Math. Gordon F. Brown, Major in Math. Penelope Ann Buck, Major Secretary of Science. Darlene Dewey, Major in Accounting. Gerald D. Item, Major in Management. Richard L. Harrison, Major in Accounting. Roger Carlton Hughes, Major in Marketing and Math. Donald F. Janowski, Major in Accounting. Gary J. Johnson, Major in Accounting. Chris W. Lafine, Major Marketing and Management. James William Miller, Major in Accounting.
candidate for the degree of Master of Education to please rise.
Tomorrow, where no angels tread, is truly the charge of a very light brigade. With inadequate weaponry for a proper attack and armor too ancient and rusty for any defense. Cannon to the right, cannon to the left, and straight ahead, the specter of disaster. Memory reminds me that either extreme of the horse, whether I'm on the neck end or the tail end, the ride's always lonesome and rough. Allow me then, class of 1962, to advise only in the sense of inform. From here, out yonder ahead of you, a speck in the crystal ball looks vaguely a bit like this. Yes, as many predict, there will be a 35-hour week. Forget it. It's not for you. You are now among the 10% of persons of specialized talent for whom the work week is 50 to 70 hours. Let me remind you of a fact in the history of modern industrial society. New leisure time is apt to go to the least creative, the least imaginative, the least productive, and the least interested in constructive thinking socially and culturally. Evidently, this is the way we want it. Yes, as each of us is painfully aware at times, we have big government, big, and bigger government. And wherever you go from here, you will have daily reminders of this. It's a fact of 20th century life in America. Have you ever wondered what happens when big government gets too big? Have you ever tried to put a balloon back together after it popped? In our press for the short work week and the long vacation, the unrealistic fringe benefit, you may ponder the question, is getting dollar security transient and illusory? Will we be getting also frustrations and ulcers? Wise men may know, perhaps you know. Is the extension of big government the only way to get power in this day and to keep it? As for myself, I've never found it possible to depend at all on external security. Security is an inside job. And if I do not generate the sense of security and maintain it within me, I'm not apt to have it. Yes, you will find competition among individuals and among groups increasing. In your lifetime, the scarcity of jobs will be a major and a persistent domestic issue nationwide. Up to now, society has needed you primarily as a consumer. Tomorrow, and for the next 40 years, you're needed as a producer. It may take a bit of time to convince you that you can't spend or give away what you don't produce, but you will learn. And it may take a bit of time to realize that any surplus is an illusion. Rather, in fact, the surplus is a shortage out of place under a poor and ineffective system of distribution in use. May I suggest that you do not be confused by any lack of jobs which may develop. Do as your pioneering forefathers did. Create your own jobs. Never forget what you should well know by now. There is no better place to create new jobs than Alaska, the greatest underdeveloped region under the flag. Yes, there will continue to be trouble in international relations. There will continue to be wars and rumors of war. It is so stated, I believe, in the apocalypse. Idealistic concepts of the brotherhood of man, the oneness of the world politically, socially, culturally, and economically are splendid concepts. Let's believe in the ultimate triumph of at least one that will work. In your lifetime, however, recognize that historically, the normal pattern of human existence has been struggle and strife, man against man, nation against nation, and in the darkest hours, people against people. This is the world in which you live. And no matter how much we deplore the condition, how deeply we feel it ought not to be that way, face the fact of international strife. And then see what you, alone and with others, can do about it. Just keep in mind, there is no peace between the East and the West, and there is not likely to be in your time. But keep trying, keep hoping, keep working in every common sense way to bring into being the lessening of tensions that is a prelude to peace. The 35-hour work week won't help much. You will need another 35 hours each week to work intelligently on this problem alone. And who knows? Perhaps you may be the one to locate the path across the crags and the peaks of ignorance and indifference and ineptness that keep nations fighting nations. Remember, it may well be true that in the country of the blind, the one-eyed man is king.
President Rasmussen, members of the Board of Regents, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen. Dr. Wood, what you have said today will become increasingly more evident as time goes by. Certainly, we can take your advice, and I think we will know what to do with it. I certainly hope after 4 years at the university we shall. Our state university, our state of Alaska, is approximately one-fifth the size of the continental United States, yet we have a population of less than one-half of that of Seattle. Alaska has tremendous potential, and yet it is not being fully developed. And this is where the University of Alaska will play its most important part, because the best resource the state has is in the caliber of the people it produces. In this field, the university will play its role of developing the character, the integrity, the ability, and the desire of the coming leaders of this state. These leaders, we hope, will lead the state in the direction of honest growth and development. And this is where the class of 1962 fits in the picture, I believe. Every member of the administration and the faculty that I have talked to has told me that this class has shown more leadership, both actual and potential, than any previous one. I'm sure perhaps that other classes have heard this also. But being a member of this class, I think perhaps it is true. I know that it has collectively held more major offices for longer periods of time, and certainly it has strived to improve the campus. These same people of the administration and the faculty have also said that our class has shown more maturity in its decisions and in its actions. If these statements are true, and again, from personally knowing my classmates, I believe that they are, then Alaska will continue to improve. I am confident that some of my classmates will attain the same height as our distinguished guests. It will be a difficult road, but we have living proof here that it can be done. And so, Dr. Wood, from knowing my classmates, I can, in all sincerity, say that I can answer your charge to us by saying that my class will do its best to fulfill its obligations. We're going to depart probably a little bit from the tradition, and that the class usually presents to the school a gift. This time, I think perhaps we could appropriately say that the class is presenting a gift to the students. As some of you are probably not yet aware, the existing facility known as the Student Union Building is shortly to be redesignated to meet the growing demands for academic endeavor, because my class is acutely aware that in order to obtain a well-rounded education and to develop a wonderful personality, if you want to call it that, or anything else, you've got to have full participation in campus activities. Because we are aware of this, we are somewhat concerned with the hazy status of the replacement facility. And so my class would like to be the first to contribute to a fund which we hope in the future will enable such a building to be completed on this campus to replace the one which we are shortly to lose. As a token of this contribution, I would like to offer to Dr. Wood the records of the class of 1962 and ask that they be incorporated in the cornerstone of any such building that might be completed, in the hopes that others will follow this example and that shortly we will have some place that the students can call a cultural center of our own choosing. I know that the students have felt this need, and certainly we are willing to work for it. I hope that our class has led the way.
Friends of the University, we come now to that part of our commencement proceedings where we are honored to do honor to our distinguished guests. There is a unity of endeavor in our four candidates for honorary degrees. Each is an adventurer. Each bears the bold stamp of the risk taker. With confidence in himself, he has had faith in his country and his fellow men. Each has been finely trained in learning the rules of his vocation and then used his experience to learn the exceptions. These men will never grow old because they are always seeking something. Our first candidate is a leader of the mind and the soul. Trained in the ministry, he came to Alaska in 1940 to the First Presbyterian Church of Fairbanks, moving to Anchorage in 1942. In 1950, the entire territory became his mission, and in 1956, he assumed the presidency of Sheldon Jackson High School and Junior College at Sitka. He has been my pastor and my friend. Prominent in community leadership, I recollect many incidents of association, but one occasion stands out above all. It was during the first congressional committee hearings in Alaska on statehood. The witnesses had uniformly stressed our need for statehood and emphasized our economic capabilities to meet the costs. As the hearing was about to conclude, up stood Army and in ringing tones assured the chairman, "Our people have the moral and spiritual values to meet this challenge of statehood, and I will do my part to lead them." It's entirely fitting then that our speaker should in subsequent years have become a delegate at large to our Alaska Constitutional Convention. Now, Mr. Marshall, will you please escort Reverend Armstrong? Robert Roland Armstrong, distinguished minister and educator. You have extended the privilege of learning to our youth and given spiritual leadership to an entire state. Now, by virtue of the authority vested in me as president of the Board of Regents of the University of Alaska, I confer upon you the honorary degree of Doctor of Humane Letters and with all the rights, privileges, and honors pertaining thereto. Thank you.
Say thank you, Elmer, for this occasion, Dr. Wood, and above all, for the opportunity of living and working in Alaska. Catherine and I are deeply touched, and we say that this is a tremendous event in our lives because of what it says for the church and its place in this state. Thank you.
Our next candidate is the distinguished dean of Alaskan bush pilots. Arriving by a steamship with an airship in the hold, our young pilot brought his craft by rail to Anchorage and there assembled it on what we nostalgically call the golf course and flew it to Fairbanks in July 1924. From then on, he became a pioneer of our Alaskan airways. He showed how mountain domes, gravel bars, and Arctic beaches could be used as landing strips, and he flew numerous Mercy flights under extremely adverse conditions. He has many firsts in his record, and he's still active as a pilot. His bush operations have grown into a scheduled commercial airline that bears his name. But with all his adventurous life and with national and international honors, our candidate has maintained his reputation for the soft-spoken word and is identified by his mild-mannered personality and kindly disposition. As a friend and as an admirer, I am happy in my official position today to pay him tribute. Now, Mr. Marshall, will you please conduct Mr. Weems? Noel Weems, pathfinder of the skies, your accomplishments are a dedication of service towards making your chosen land the air crossroads of the world. So now, by virtue of the authority vested in me as president of the Board of Regents of the University of Alaska, I hereby confer upon you the honorary degree of Doctor of Science, and with all the rights, privileges, and honors pertaining thereto. Our next candidate is a world-renowned traveler, lecturer, commentator, and author. I'm going to indulge in that oratorical hazard of departing from my written words. But I also am touched by anecdotes, and I remember very well as an adventurer's lad exploring in a homemade raft along the Bay of Skagway, when up above me came the planes that were on this first round-the-world flight. They were overheading to touch down at Whitehorse. It was only a few years ago that I had the pleasure of meeting one of the flyers, and he was an exceptional individual. I'm referring to Eric Nelson. Eric, as I remember, is both a general in the Swedish Air Force and the American Air Force. And he told many anecdotes, some of which I could only repeat if we were in a smaller gathering. But to give you some idea of this man's compulsion and motivation for success, he told me this little story of how he was thinking of getting out of the course, and another associate of his persuaded him to go in with him in an engineering line to make aircraft. And he offered to pay him a salary that was substantially more than he was receiving at that time. I believe he had a colonel's pay. Eric said to him, he said, "Bill, if you're going to risk everything on making these flying machines, I'll take a chance with you. Just give me a block of the stock in your company." Well, that company happened to be the Boeing aircraft, and Eric now is retired in Hawaii. Referring again to my script, I might say that our honored guest today has a fame that is so well known that it requires no identification of deed. But he is equally outstanding in personality. He has lived by his dreams but he has survived through his grasp of reality. It was about 25 years ago that I first met this distinguished guest of ours, together with his family at a ski resort. And I've always remembered the generous simplicity in the grant of his time and talent when he was called upon for impromptu remarks. His warmth and his sincerity have made him a great person among famous men. Mr. Marshall, will you please escort Mr. Collins? Lowell Jackson Thomas, distinguished explorer, pioneer of Alaska. By sharing your adventurous findings with others, you have removed much mystery and advanced truth and understanding. Now, by virtue of the authority vested in me as president of the Board of Regents of the University of Alaska, I confer upon you the honorary degree of Doctor of Laws with all the rights, privileges, and honors pertaining thereto. Thank you. Our last honored guest has a distinguished career in many fields, the law, the noble profession of teaching, and military service to his country. But as a legislator, he has undoubtedly made his greatest contribution. For 7 years, starting in 1931, he was a member of the House of Representatives of his home state, Colorado, the last 2 years of which he served as Speaker. In 1939, he moved to the state Senate and became floor leader of his party. In 1948, he was elected to the United States Congress, and by marked acclaim, he has been returned ever since to office. Fortunate indeed for Alaska that he has ever since been so returned, and that he became appointed to membership on the powerful Interior and Insular Affairs Committee, and subsequently became its chairman. Through this committee flowed the legislation necessary to loose the bonds of the developing territory and shape the economic pattern for a sufficient state. The actions of this committee, without which even this university could not have progressed, have been identified in our local press. However, it is a champion of statehood that our candidate for honors is most widely known and deeply regarded. It was only through his skill in parliamentary procedure, his faith in our Northland, his determination to aid a people, that we can say the state of Alaska. Truly a pioneer and adventurer in shaping our political destiny. Mr. Marshall, would you please present Congressman Aspinall? Wayne Norval Aspinall, distinguished statesman, friend of Alaska. By long labors and constant concern, you have brought us material well-being. As champion of statehood, we have political equality. Now, by virtue of the authority vested in me as president of the Board of Regents of the University of Alaska, I confer upon you the honorary degree of Doctor of Laws, and with all the rights, privileges, and honors pertaining thereto.
We'll depart from the script just a slight bit here. One of our distinguished guests has a broadcast to make to the Lesser 49, and I'm going to see that he's provided some transportation, Dr. Ray.
Thank you. Graduates, that in them there may be health, victory over sin, strength and humility, goodness of heart and gentleness, full observance of your law, and eternal gratefulness to you. Bless them, O Lord, and enlighten them to use wisely what they have received, to translate the wisdom of the past into a challenging view of the present and an optimistic Christian vision of the future. And may the blessings of Almighty God, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit descend upon all of you and remain forever. Amen.